If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Years ago, I remember when Jeff Carlin came up to me. I was at the Tribune having my usual fresh air break, having a cigarette, Camel filter. We're on the wall of the Tribune Tower. I'm looking west across the street. And there, Jeff is saying, the reason why people want to hear this podcast, the Chicago Way podcast, he was pitching me then, is because people want to know the nitty-gritty of things that happen. They want to know how you write the column. They want to know what happens on the inside of things. Well, listen, what about a judge telling you a story about the demise of public order in Chicago, the breakdown of public order, and the rise of the anarchy? It happened when a bunch of judges were called together in a meeting by Tim Evans, who was carrying out orders by boss Tony Preckwinkle, president of the Cook County Board and chairman of the Cook County Democratic Party. And what did she want done? She wanted the jails emptied. The jails emptied of violent criminals. She wanted them out. She didn't want them in jail. The guy who's going to tell you this story is a 20-year veteran of the Cook County courts, veteran bond court judge, the Right Honorable James R. Brown, my friend, Jeff's friend. He's here to give you the inside story. And along the way, he'll talk about how bad apples destroy public order. And some bad apples in law enforcement, whether they're Chief of Detectives Hanhart or Cardinal Comey, the little finger of the FBI, and how they destroy public trust and public order with their lies. And as always, Jeff Carlin is here, co-host with me, WGN radio executive producer, friend of cats, baker of pies, future physics teacher, and me, I'm John Cass, editor of John Cass News, editor and publisher of johncassnews.com. We're only $50 a year, and you get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. And where are you as Judge Brown reaches into his memory, and you can imagine him in the black folds of justice, blind justice, as anarchy reigns in Cook County and Chicago as violence begins, and you wonder, how did it get this way? How did it get this way? This was a great town. What happened to it? This is how it got this way. You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago way.
The Chicago way, that's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
As promised, our guest today, as everyone's playing lawyer and judge in the country, is the Right Honorable James R. Brown, longtime judge, Cook County, retired. Welcome to the Chicago Way, Judge.
Thank you, John. It's delightful to be here with you and Jeff.
Yeah, Judge. Good morning. Thanks for hopping on here. I read your piece. You wrote for John, and it was spot on, a who's who of skullduggery.
Well, as, a real quick story.
It's great to have you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
For those who come to the Chicago podcast for the first time, I love to get
the
there
as they
say, hey, you're bona fides. For the listeners who may not know who you are, and kind of give us a little bit of background, where did you begin and what's your story?
Well, a real quick story. In sixth grade at St. Barbara Grammar School in Chicago, we studied the Constitution. I got 100% on the test, and I came home and showed my mom. I said, "Mom, I want to be a lawyer." She said, "Son, I'm the youngest of five, and nobody in my family had gone to college." And she said, "Son, if you want to be a lawyer, I'll make sure your tuition is paid." So long story short, I went to law school, graduated at 24, became an attorney, started work at the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. I tried my first case and I won. And I thought to myself, you know, I want to be a judge. And I worked hard. And 13 years later, I was elected to the Circuit Court of Cook County. And the rest is history. Served for 18 years.
So that you retired in 2020. Is that am I right on that?
Yes. After 18 years, I chose not to run for reelection. We were in the throes of COVID. Actually, I had a personal health issue, which I've overcome.
Excellent.
And I thought, you know, and the laws had changed greatly in Illinois, where they were more lenient on criminals. And I thought, nah, this isn't for me. So I chose to go out to Scottsdale for part of the year.
And there in Scottsdale or somewhere else, you may have had time to write a beautiful essay called His Judgment Cometh, and that right soon. And I think it was published just a few weeks ago. And there's a picture of one of my favorite people on the front piece of that essay, Judge, and it's George Soros.
I think you're being facetious.
Yeah, John, it was an honor that you allowed me to write for you. I mean, I know you're a very humble guy, but the fact of the matter is you are a legend, a legendary writer in Chicago, and it was a great honor to write for your news service.
Well, I really appreciated your perspective, and one of the reasons why you're here today or why we've asked you is that everyone's going to play lawyer and judge. Everyone's going to be a judge now that James Comey has been indicted. I'm relishing every moment of this. The deep state rat finally ends up or runs out of room. He runs out of rope. He can't climb anywhere. And he's been indicted. What have you to say about that, Judge?
Well, you know, in the article that I had the honor and privilege to write for your news service, I talked a lot about lawfare.
Right.
And it's the weaponization of the government against your political opponent. And people are going to argue that this is what is happening now to Comey, that it's now happening on the other side. I disagree with that. I think that this is important that this happens, that in Comey be brought to justice. And then people or the other side will realize that this is not good. And hopefully as a result of this case with Comey and maybe others, that this will finally end, that we won't be indicting our political opponents. But it's got we have to set an example. We have to set the standard that this must stop. And I believe this is the only way to do it by bringing people to account for their misdeeds. So that's my take on it.
And Judge, differentiation here is that, in my view, and correct me if I'm wrong, the idea of lawfare here is people who are maybe in post or about to be elected to a post or have recently were targeted, trying to keep someone from obtaining a position where the charge is essentially while they were in a position, what they did, you know, they did something wrong. And the notion that it's not lawfare is more guided in that this is malfeasance while in power, and we're trying to bring that to bear. Because it seems like in the past, you know, things that we've called lawfare on this podcast were things that were kind of extracurricular to the actual running of their position, power they were wielding. Whereas this seems like it's directly, you know, he was in power and he was using his power under the law to attack his opponents.
Yeah, that's right, Jeff. And it appears that there's sufficient evidence. I mean, a grand jury brought an indictment that he did, in fact, lie to Congress, and he should be held to account. Just because you hold a powerful office doesn't give you the right to ignore the law or snub your nose at the law. And I think that this is a good thing right now. And then I think in the future, people are going to think twice before they either commit a crime or they want to engage in lawfare.
Judge, why is it important for the people of America, for the people of this republic, to know that their leaders, when they're testifying under oath, and we all see that picture in our minds of James Comey, right hand up, testifying before God that he's going to tell the truth. What happens to a republic when the leader of the federal police department is judged to be a liar?
The people, they lose faith and trust in the system. The FBI is the most powerful law enforcement agency in the world. And the people, the citizens, have to know that the leaders of these institutions, of the law enforcement agencies, are going to play it by the book, that they're going to follow the law, that they're not going to lie, they're going to be transparent. The people need to know that in order to have faith in the system. There's enough distrust out there. And when a leader lies under oath in front of the Congress, they have to be held to account, no doubt about it.
What comes of this? I mean, the case is going to expose a lot of things. I mean, we all saw and heard his testimony, and there, you know, there was a lot of people on the right who were saying, "What, you know, there's no proof. What he's saying is kind of not true. It's very not true. It's, you know, it runs a foul. He's clearly overlooking stuff." It sounds like what was laid out by Bondi and was kind of discussed by Patel, it was, because as we tape this, this is just kind of breaking this overnight in the morning, that it's that he was just had blinders on to one part of the story of evidence and then only spoke on the stuff that he was focused on, when at the time he must have known that there was this other evidence that kind of disproved or counter evidence. And so that's really what we're going to hopefully see here, is that in a law, in a case, in court, that it says this is what he was ignoring and choosing and saying he didn't know or didn't exist or just not talking about. That's really what we're going to get here. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, what happens to him if he's found guilty here?
Well, it's a perjury charge. It's a nonviolent offense. Mm-hmm. More likely than not, it's going to be a probation. It's going to be a fine. That would be the sentence in the case. But Comey has an attitude that the ends justify the means. Mm-hmm. He's got an arrogance and an air about him. I mean, he was leaking information to somebody. That's the accusation. And then he lied about leaking it. First of all, he should have never been leaking that information. And then to go in front of Congress under oath and lie about it is very unbecoming, and it causes, as you alluded to earlier, Jeff and John, the people lose trust, and we need trust in these institutions. The people need to know that there's a place that you can go, that you can receive justice regardless of your political affiliation. So that's my take on it.
I've known many fine police officers, good police officers, Chicago cops, experts in their fields, investigators, tough guys, able to do surveillance work and discreet and the whole nine yards. They are, you look up to them as people who know their craft. But at the same time, their work is destroyed by corrupt cops. Like, I'll throw one for an example. The late William Hanhart, chief of detectives of the Chicago Police Department, probably the most powerful cop I've ever seen, who could get you transferred. I don't care if you're the nephew of a judge or a committeeman. You know, you don't want to work at 103rd and Doty for your shift. Please get me downtown. He would get you downtown. And that guy was the outfit's jewel thief. And the effect of that corruption, like a rock thrown into a still pond, the rippling effect of all that over the years hurt the department terribly. It created cynical attitudes beyond cynical attitudes, and it hurt the the police officers. It hurt the public.
You can bring that forward, John, to today, you know, with the settlement that just happened with the city, the Ronald Watts situation, where, you know, you have the justice warriors on the left using that as a case to say, hey, we need to change our laws and have no cash bail. And we need to have, you know, people out on the streets right away and throwing out gun charges because we have bad cops like Ronald Watts. And, oh, yeah, the city's going to pay $90 million, you know, out of pocket that they don't have. And that's the ripple effect. You've kind of mentioned, you referenced it. I mean, that's the now that we're dealing with. And Judge, you kind of touched on, you know, one of the reasoning why you retired in 2020 was because of the laws changing. What, obviously being, you know, a juror in doing this, what was the feeling about among the judges? Was it everyone was on board thinking about, I mean, I'm sure they weren't, but we know the system, but were there a lot of judges like you who were like, well, I'm going to see how this goes and I'm going to write it out. But I mean, it had to feel like there was a watershed moment that we were, that something, it was all going to be a totally different world after 2020.
You know, I'm going to answer that question, Jeff, if I could just for a moment allude to a quick story, because John brought up Hanhart. Yeah. So I was very close friends with the late, great actor, Dennis Farina. And I'm sure, as you both know, Dennis was a Chicago police officer for 18 years.
And a friend of Bill's.
Sure. Yeah. Yes. And he was a burglary detective, and he worked underneath Hanhart. And he would tell me stories about how things were going there, how Hanhart would direct or give assigned cases away from people that were connected to the mob. And in Dennis would investigate cases that would be forced to investigate cases that had nothing, you know, that were not mob related. Hanhart was steering his detectives away from investigating mob associates. And again, like you said, John, and then you have people like that that can infiltrate the Chicago Police Department, and you got a great department, but that taints it because one bad apple spoils the barrel. So, yeah, that you're absolutely right about that. And then, excuse me, Jeff, with regard to the laws changing. So here's what happened in Chicago. I was assigned to Central Bond Court. I started there in Central Bond Court at 26th in California in 2009. And so the audience would know what Central Bond Court judges do is when the case comes into the system, their very first court appearance would come before the bond court. I was one of six.
Where was that, Judge?
It was at 26th in California. It operated 7 days a week. Every holiday was always in session. So the first court, when someone's charged with an offense, their first court date would be in front of one of us. There were six of us. So what happened was in 2017, early 2017, Judge Evans came to us, met with the six of us, and indicated to us that he wanted us to change our criteria a little bit and be more lenient and let people out of jail. In other words, reduce the jail population. And we had a group of six judges, very diverse, very good, competent, capable judges. And after the meeting with Judge Evans, we said, we can't do that. We've taken an oath. We have to follow what the current existing law in Illinois is. We're not going to just let people out willy-nilly. Our name is on that order. That person goes out and kills somebody after we let them out, we're going to be in the front page of the newspaper. Judge lets out arch criminal and he murders a child. And so we sat down as a group collectively and we said, we have an oath we have to follow. We have to follow the law. You never get in trouble as a judge if you follow the law and follow the facts. People may not agree with your decisions, but hey, your conscience is clear. You did what you swore you were going to do. And then when we refused collectively as a group, the six of us, and this has never happened before in Cook County, Judge Evans, as the chief judge, his only power over us as circuit court judges is the power of assignment. He can't tell us how to decide a case or anything of that nature, but he could reassign us. And what he did was at the end or in September of 2017, he transferred all six of us out of Bancorp because we refused to go along with his narrative of emptying the jail. And it was so disconcerting that that happened to us. We were all very conscientious, hardworking judges. We did the right thing. We didn't care. We weren't, you know, pro state or pro police. We were right down the middle where we should have been. And he threw us out. And there was a lot of whispering going on in the Cook County judiciary that that wasn't right, but nobody stepped up and said anything about it. And it was very upsetting to us. So I'll leave it at that.
Were there enough slots in night court to put all the judges, you know, maybe like 3 o'clock in the morning call for all you guys?
Yeah. Well, what he did was he knew that, I believe he knew that that wasn't the right thing to do, but he had committed to that narrative of emptying the jail. So what he did, he called us all in individually into his office, explained to us that he was transferring us and asked us, he gave us the option to go to whatever assignment we wanted to go. And when I went in and met with him, I said, I like it here. I want to stay in Central Bancorp. This is it was my dream job. I mean,
and I got good at it.
Yes. And I had high evaluations from the different bar groups each time I ran for reelection. And I was capable. I think I was well liked there. And he said, well, you can't stay. And he says, where do you want to go? And I could have went upstairs into the trial courtrooms at 26th Street. And I chose not to. Because again, the narrative was the same. It was going to be lenient, let these people go, you know, don't incarcerate anybody kind of thing, even if they deserve it. Not that my goal was to incarcerate anyone because it wasn't. But I chose not to. I said, just put me in a felony preliminary hearing courtroom. So, and that's where I wound up.
Think of this as a river that flows from some source. I have my theory. May I offer a theory?
Yes.
It flows from Tony Preckwinkle. All the, I would say, disgusting aspects of criminal justice in Cook County and the deterioration of the rule of law in Cook County, that means Chicago and the suburbs, is all related to Tony Preckwinkle and her insane, I don't mean this lightly, desire to get rid of, to clean out the jail and put people favored by George Soros in as county prosecutor, like Kim Fox. What do you say to that?
I think you're 100% correct. I think that there was a collab. I can't prove this, but I believe that there was a collaboration between the chief judge and the county board president to reduce that population into jail. And as a result, that would save money from the jail, and they can allocate that money by not incarcerating people and use it elsewhere. But the unfortunate reality is that some people need to be incarcerated. The public needs to be protected from some people because there are bad people out there, but they were more concerned about emptying that jail and using those funds in other areas of the county budget. That's my theory on it. So I agree with you, John. I completely agree with you.
What stuns me, because I know your work as a judge, I know your work as a lawyer and a officer of the court, and it's always been exemplary. And I see good people on the bench, and I know some of them. I know some of your former colleagues who were, you know, moved out of the bond courts. I mean, that's where it starts. That's where justice really starts, because you're trying to get people off the street who would harm others. And they're not rich folks in Flossmoor or Western Springs. These are the people who would be harmed are living on the south and west sides. They're the poorest of the poor. They're helpless. They're going to be victims if this guy, whoever it is, gets out. And that's what's on the judge's shoulders. And so then she pushes you through Tim Evans to get them out of jail. And then they go back and hurt these people. I wonder, what does that do to your soul, Judge, when you're a judge and you're seeing this and you know the repeat violent offender? What does that do to you?
I have to sleep at night. And the thought of letting somebody out of jail when I know better based on their previous criminal history and the offense that they're charged with, when you know that they're not a model citizen and you're going to sign an order allowing them to get back on the streets and potentially hurt someone, it's the thought, you repel that, perish that thought, that that could happen, that you'd be responsible for an innocent person getting hurt because you let them out, because the political narrative is to empty the jail. And John, you alluded to judges. You know, I was there for 18 years in Cook County, and I'm going to tell you, I know sometimes judges get a bad rap, but I'm telling you, in the 18 years I was there, 99% of the judges were wonderful, hardworking, intelligent, good, solid jurists. They really were. Of course, in every profession, there you have a few goofballs or someone that just didn't get the memo. But overall, the Cook County judiciary is an outstanding institution. A lot of that stems back from Gaylord, because although as bad as Gaylord was, and I was a lawyer back then, John, you would know better than I. I'm sure you covered that. That really instilled the fear of God in anybody that was going to ascend to the bench. And so it had a great effect.
I remember one of the bailiffs of the court was found to put $30,000 or $40,000 in the freezer of his house. How you doing, Jimmy? Jimmy DeLeo, but Jimmy DeLeo walked on that. You know, there was the he was not he was accused, but not convicted of anything like any untoward activity, right?
Yes. But again, you know, I think the positive effect of Gaylord was that it really scared people that were going to become judge. And I'm telling you, the judges now, when I was there, I've been gone for 5 years. The judges, for the most part, overall, were outstanding jurists, were good, honest, decent, hardworking people. And I was proud to serve along with them. So I think the judiciary is in good shape, aside from the people that are in charge and running it and pushing the political narrative to empty the jail. I don't think that's you let the chips fall where they may. You don't decide, well, we only could have X amount of people in jail. That's not how it should work.
Two things that are happening now is that Tony Preckwinkle, architect of this catastrophe and this the destruction of the rule of law, in my view, is seeking re-election. I think she's, 800, going on Methuselah now? 78? I think she wants to be reelected, Tony Preckwinkle. And the other thing is that Charles Beach has replaced Timothy Evans as the chief judge of the Cook County Circuit Court. And he was, Evans was voted out by the fellow judges, and so it works, after serving in the role for, I think, 24 years. Now, what happens in these elections for chief judge? Because I remember Tim Allen, former alderman, running, and Alderman Murphy, a former, I think maybe it was Murphy then the judge, working on Allen's campaign, but he didn't win. What happens with judges voting for or against each other? What's the dynamics of all that?
So it's a great question, John. It's a very interesting process, and people have analogized it or likened it to how the Pope gets elected. So how it works is probably a month or so before the chief judge election, which occurs every 3 years. Only the full circuit court judges, those are the judges that are elected by the people, can vote. There's about approximately 265 elected judges. So they all convene, it's every 3 years in September, they all convene in the jury room at the Daly Center. It's a huge room. and the candidates, whoever's running, give speeches, and the judges have a piece of paper, and they write down who they want to win. The votes are tabulated, and then the chief judge is elected. Very secretive. Nobody is in that room. No non-judge is in that room while that election takes place. And in order for a person to become the chief judge, they have to have, for instance, if they're 265, they have to have half plus one in order to succeed and become the next chief judge. So just a couple things real quick, if I may, Judge Evans. Judge Evans, and nobody can deny this, is one of the most gentlemanly, affable, cordial, friendly, decent men you will ever meet. He's just, it's very difficult to dislike Judge Evans. He's just a nice man. My complaint about Judge Evans throughout my tenure was, he came, as you alluded to, he was alderman of the 18th ward the fourth ward for 18 years. And he was more of a politician than he was a judge. There's a skill to becoming a judge. A judge should not be a politician because you're not advocating for any one position. You're letting the chips fall where they may. You're a neutral arbiter. And I think Judge Evans was too political in that regard. And that was my complaint about him. Though he was a nice man, he was more of a politician. Now, as to Judge Beach, Charlie Beach, I've known him for a long time. One of the nicest men you'll ever meet. Very affable, very friendly, very decent, super smart, super experienced, young. I think he'll be a great, great addition to the court as its leader. And that's a big job, very big job.
Well, they have work to do to repair the damage. How do you do that?
Yeah, I think he's going to institute a lot of reforms. I think he's going to have good, he appoints other judges to run the different various divisions in the Circuit Court of Cook County. I think he'll put good people in place. I don't think he'll do it based on, on politics. He'll do it based on merit and have helped people around him that are giving him good advice. And, John, the chief judge is not only in control of the 400 or so judges. He's also in control of 3,000 jobs, the probation department. Yeah. There's a lot of work there. He's now in charge. The chief judge is now in charge of electronic monitoring.
Dart gave that up.
It's a big, big endeavor.
And one thing I have to say, and for those of you listening, there's a secret that reporters and judges, even former judges, know. And that is every morning to go to CWB Chicago and read about the crimes and the judges and the judiciary. And one of the stories about Judge Evans was probably had buried. It was a source, according to CWB, a source who was present for Wednesday's balloting, meaning when the Judge Beach was installed and Judge Evans was removed. A source who was present said that Judge Nicole Patton, who if I'm not mistaken is a Black American judge, dropped out and threw her support behind Beach. And given the racial politics of this county and the city and state, I think if true, Judge Nicole Patton, if this is true, she deserves not only headlines, but our praise and respect, our eternal praise and respect. What do you guys think?
Well, John, my sources told me the same thing, that Judge Patton, after the first ballot, realized she had 14 judges supporting her only. And she realized that she didn't really have a chance to win. And she did, in fact, according to my sources, throw her support behind Judge Beach.
There you go.
I'd also note, I don't know her personally, but I've heard wonderful things about her. And she's a president of the Chicago Bar Association, which is a big job. And I think that's great. I mean, we should never, ever be advocating for deciding somebody based on their identity,
tribalism,
race.
Yes, sick.
Yes. And it was a very, well, I believe she did. She probably thought it was the right thing to do. It was an admirable thing to do. So I think it was great, but I've heard great things about her too.
Okay, so where do we go from here now that Preckwinkle has destroyed the state's attorney's office through Kim Fox? That was a great training ground. You came up there. Many good judges and officers of the court came through that training ground. How do they repair that? All the people who've left.
Well, we now have Eileen O'Neill Burke as the Cook County State's Attorney. I know Eileen for a long time. I know her personally. She was an outstanding lawyer, outstanding. She was a Illinois Appellate Court Justice. Well, she was a Circuit Court Judge, then an Illinois Appellate Court Justice. She means business. She's running, from all accounts, from what I'm hearing, she's running that office tight. She's doing a great job. I think that she's partly responsible for why crime is now dropping, because she's taking the prosecution seriously. Under the previous state's attorney, they were referring gun cases, people charged with possessing weapons. They were referring them to restorative justice court, to what we call peace court. It's the
kind of thing that drives Jeff crazy. Yeah.
Yes. I can't imagine putting somebody in peace court, where you sit in a circle with a social worker and a judge and talk about your life. And I just can't fathom the concept. And it's another thing I disagree with Judge Evans about. He was proud of that restorative justice court. A lot of people in CWB, who does heroic work, one of the greatest reporting agencies that I've ever read, reported on that people are going to restorative justice court and then going out and recommitting crimes, and they're documenting that over at CWB. But
it's the only place that will publish stories about things that are happening that the inside, you know, the powers that be, the status quo, doesn't want released. And it's exactly what happened in court. Like, why did you release that man who hit that through that log in that young girl's face on Christmas break at Michigan Avenue last year? Why did you release him? You know, not you, Judge, but another judge.
Yeah, that was horrific. And CWB reports it, and they report it fairly and honestly, and they are to be highly commended for their work.
One of the things I wanted to throw in is you kind of doubling back to the choosing and voting for a chief judge. Obviously, it doesn't happen in a vacuum. They don't just say, okay, here, today's the day, all the judges show up and then you vote. Is there, is someone dropping a leaflet on your desk? Is there someone saying, hey, judge, can I borrow your ear for a minute? This is the person. I mean, what's the political machine, if that's the right word for it, that kind of influences judges there? Because I feel like that's how we got to this case. And I've never liked the idea of electing judges, because I feel like you said it kind of makes them almost have to be politicians and then jurists. And it's kind of gives me the ick, is the stupid term I like to use. What is that? What's that feel like?
Well, Judge Beach, he never struck me as a political being. He was just a hardworking lawyer and then got elected judge and was a fair guy and very well liked and very intelligent and competent. And he is not a political guy. Judge Evans obviously was or is a political person. And I just think that the judges thought that you needed some young blood, like John alluded to earlier in the podcast here, that Judge Evans was chief judge for 24 years. Yeah. Judge Evans was elected to the bench in 1992. He was a judge for 33 years. And chief judge for 24. You need a fresh perspective. You need new ideas and new blood. And Judge Evans is 82 years old. And I don't know that he would have ever left if he were reelected as chief judge.
I'm old, and I know I've known him since he was an alderman in the fourth ward. I knew him when Tony Preckwinkle hated him, not when she relied on him.
Yeah. And you know what? I wanted to drop a little story on President Preckwinkle. So when I first got on the bench, I was assigned for a time at Area 1. There were two courtrooms at 51st and Wentworth. And President Preckwinkle would be in that courtroom all the time with
really
Yes, she would come to that court all the time with victims from her ward. She was the alder woman of her ward there in the fourth ward. She had beat Judge Evans. And she was a very strong advocate for victims. And, you know, I thought that was wonderful because in all the court, I've served in every court in Chicago, and I never would see like political people come in with the victims. And she did. And that was impressive to me. And it really resonated with me. But then to see after she becomes county board president that she seems to be more concerned with defendants than she is her constituency or victims, it was very upsetting to me to see that. Because I know at one time she was really a great advocate for victims.
That's interesting.
Well, as we close, I have to ask you another question to go back to the beginning. Well, there's two questions to go. One is, in your long tenure as a judge, thinking of Jim Comey, bald-faced lie, standing up there, raising his hand, promising to tell the truth, and then lying directly to senators under oath. I'm wondering, you've seen people lie too, haven't you, as a judge? How does that make you feel? And when they lie to you, what did you do? How did you respond?
John, that's a great question because it's one of the main roles that a judge plays is he is the
arbiter.
Yes. And the credibility, we have to determine the credibility of the witness, whether or not they're telling the truth or not. That's a huge part of our job. And I'll tell you, as a private citizen now, looking at Comey, the arrogance that he's always displayed and calling attention to himself and what he did to General Flynn and what he did with writing 8647 in the sand, as in, you know, alluding to maybe the president should be killed. As a private citizen, to see that arrogance, it's disgusting. The judge in me says, well, he's presumed innocent right now. Even though he's indicted, he's still presumed innocent, and he's got to be accorded due process and given a fair trial. But he's just not a good role model. He's not a good example to people. He's just not. And when people, what I did when, you know, if you, when there was a witness on the stand in front of me told a little bitty lie, you cannot believe anything else they say. If they lie about the small things,
right,
they'll lie about the big things.
Exactly.
So you find them to be not credible, and it hurts their cause as a judge.
When the boss of the FBI, what does that do to the cause?
Right. I mean, imagine what it does to the rank and file and to the citizens on TV watching. Yeah, they lose trust. They lose trust in the institution, and it's not good.
I have friends who are FBI agents and friends who are cops, and those guys are the guys who spend lifetimes in a car, eating Polish sausage, drinking bad iced tea, and waiting for a guy to come out of a store, right? They're on surveillance. I mean, it's not really glamorous, you know, if you've ever done it. It's really not glamorous. It's not like watching my wife loves that show where the Irish family always has dinner on Sunday, the cops. Wait, what is that? Blue Bloods. And it's always it's always like dramatic. You know, they're in the car and the guy comes out and they chase him. But that's not real life. The real life is your car smells like Polish sausage and Italian beef.
Yeah.
And all that, those guys do it because they swore an oath to uphold the law. And then when this guy lies repeatedly to the Congress that is charged with oversight, he diminishes everything about the rule of law.
Yeah, you know, I just want to say, the police ought to be lauded. They do a very difficult job, and they've been vilified in the last several years, and it's not a good thing. They're, for the most part, they're heroes. They're good people, and they should be lionized as opposed to vilified. And one last thought I want to leave you fellas with with regard to Cook County Judiciary. It's my adamant belief that people should have trust in it because there are so many good judges who are hardworking, intelligent, fair-minded. They're good people, and you have to have trust in them. The Illinois Supreme Court, I mean, it's primarily Democratic. They're good people. They're smart. They're intelligent. They try to do the right thing. They're good people, and they should be lauded, and people should trust in them because they're serious about their job and they're good at it. And I would just say, trust the judiciary. They're good people, and they're fair people.
Judge, before we let you go, I wanted two things. One, the Comey thing with the stuff in the sand allegedly wrote, you know, just to cover our bases there, that he says he stumbled across it. But two, as we're talking here, it's been announced that Patrick Fitzgerald is going to represent Comey here in this case. God. Which talk about Chicago Way. What's your reaction to hearing that?
Well, I wasn't a great fan, but he is a bulldog of a lawyer. He's a tough, hard-nosed lawyer, and it's probably the best lawyer for Comey in this case because he'll leave no stone unturned, and he'll advocate for his client zealously. I can assure you of that.
I'll tell you one thing though: if you look at Pat Fitzgerald and you lied to him, would you want to be the guy who lied to Pat Fitzgerald? No, I would not. Neither would you. Neither would Judge Brown. And Jim Comey is a liar, a practiced liar, a silky. One thing. What about the other aspect of the case? Because conspiracies have a way of leaking onto other people who are involved. There's a guy. He's got big ears. He's a liar. They're building a temple for him right now at taxpayers' expense on priceless lakefront land. The big-eared guy who gathered all the intelligence people in his office in the so-called sacred Oval Office and hatched this stuff where they were destroy the incoming president with a lie about Russia collusion and get the media and other people to reproduce it and spout it off. And this fellow at the center of all this is our one and only sainted Barack Obama, baptized in the Chicago River when he was just a mere lad. What do you guys think of that? When will that come? Will that leak, this Comey thing, will that leak onto him there?
I probably not. I don't think. I think former President Obama is untouchable. I think former President Obama ought to do is follow in the example of George Bush. Go into private life, keep your head down, enjoy your life, enjoy your life's work, and stay out of the limelight, stay out of the public eye. That's what I would suggest that he do. I think that's what all former presidents should
do. That's common sense, and that's why we like you, Judge.
Yeah, Judge, one last thing before we go. You know, you got a busy docket ahead of you in the day you're working, but you carve out 90 minutes for a good meal. What's your go-to in Chicago? What are you eating?
Oh, my God, I love Chicago food so much. Well, I used to go to Kinsey Chop House when that was open.
Sure.
It was a great place to eat. But I'm a Portillo's guy. Love Portillo's. I love Rosebud. Those are my favorite go-tos.
Hey, what do you get there?
Oh, I got to get the chicken piccata or the chicken milanese or a beef sandwich dip with hot. You go to Portillo's. And a Maxwell Polish. And
like
White Castle.
Charred?
Every so often, you got to have a double cheeseburger from White Castle.
What is this? Okay, what is Judge Brown's sack? Because now you're studying. John Cass has just asked you to write a very difficult column about a public figure that we both know. And he's kind of a sourpuss in public, but really has the heart of a hero inside him. And it's a hard story to write. I'm not going to say who it is. And it's in the middle of the night and you're like, I don't know what to do. What am I going to write about? How am I going to write this? And you drive to White Castle's and you have a craving. So what's in the bag in your car when you drive out?
John, I love that question. Four double cheese.
Me too.
Yes. I don't even need the fries. The four double cheese do the trick.
Four double cheese, and I go Diet Coke because I'm conscientious. But yes. You know, we're gonna have to. I'm gonna have to ask you to review. I'm writing a cookbook. Betty and I are writing a cookbook now with all my favorite recipes in it. And some guys, a guy from the neighborhood from Bridgeport said, no one cares about recipes. They can all get the recipes anywhere. They want to know about you. They want to know about, you know, how do you write a cookbook and not have cooking in it? I don't know. It's a big problem for me.
And don't forget about the Rick of Benny's breaded steak sandwich with mozzarella and hot jardiniere.
All right, we need to do a Judge Brown food tour. That's what we got to do.
You know, I guess just one more quick thing. So I was down in South Carolina in Hilton Head for a while, and I went to the Publix, a very nice grocery store.
Yeah.
So I'm walking up and down the aisle looking for hot jardiniere.
Good luck.
Can't find it. So I go to the clerk. I said, hey, could you tell me where you keep the hot jardiniere? And he said, what's that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
You can find 800 types of hot sauce because that's where the Reaper pepper comes from and all those hot peppers. That guy lives around the corner from my brother down in South Carolina. Yeah, it's hot pepper country. Jardiniere, what you doing? What you talking about?
You didn't know what it was.
Yep.
I said, I thought to myself, now I know I'm in the wrong place.
It's not civilized if they don't have jardiniere.
No, that's exactly
because
right.
If they don't have jardiniere, then they won't have a counter for you to do the lean when you're eating your sandwich.
Exactly.
You have to do the lean so you don't get it all over your suit.
You know, we have four Portillo's out here in Arizona. We probably got 10 Lou Malnati's. It's like Chicago West out here in Scottsdale.
All the restaurants that are closing in Chicago are opening there. Same in Naples.
Yes.
Same in Naples. Everyone's going to Naples. And I'm sorry, but Chicago, I love you. And you break my heart. And you break Judge Brown's heart. You're breaking Jeff Carlin's heart. On a happy note, so what are you going to write about next for me? Are you going to write food? Or are you going to write profiles?
I have to do profile. All I know how to do is eat the food. I certainly can't cook it.
Judge James, the Honorable, Right Honorable Judge James R. Brown, thanks for joining us on this Chicago Way podcast.
Thanks, Judge.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it, Judge. Thank you. For the Right Honorable James R. Brown, Judge of the Cook County Circuit Court, retired. Former state's attorney, retired, now I guess working on his golf game somewhere between Arizona and Scottsdale and South Carolina. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, future physics teacher, friend of cats, baker of pies. And for me, John Cass, editor of John Cass News, where for $50, that's all, you get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. And don't forget, you can get that black golden Mutza cup. Makes an awesome addition to your breakfast table. Join us again next time, won't you? For another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.